Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look out. His only films to be buried with. Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With, The Resurrection. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a chieftain, and I love films. As Friedrich Nietzsche once said, convictions are more dangerous foes of truth than lies. Also, Secrets and Lies is one of the better Mike Leigh films. Yeah, that's factual, I suppose. It's quite a weird one, Nietzsche, but I heard you were a difficult man. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. But not this week! This week, I use my newly acquired shamanic powers to bring back a former guest from the dead and ask them 12 new questions. And this week is the return of the amazing Mr. Romesh Ranganathan. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get 25 minutes extra chat, questions with Romesh. You get a secret for him. You get the whole thing uncut. No ads. You also get it as a video. All that and more over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. Your TV homework, watch season 1 of the Emmy-nominated Ted Lasso on the Apple TV app before season 2 starts on July 23rd, and watch Soulmate season 1 on Amazon Prime. One will make you happy, the other will make you question your relationships. So this is episode 155. We have BAFTA-winning comedian Romesh Ranganathan. He's one of my favourite comics. He's one of my favourite people. I was very happy to record this over 2 hours on Zoom. And frankly, my sides hurt from laughing. He's the best. You love him. I love him. This one is a classic. I hope you enjoy it as much as we did recording it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 155 of Films to be Buried With. The Resurrection!
Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With.
The Resurrection!
I am joined today by an actor, a writer, a presenter, a man, a League of Their Owner, a Weakest Linker, an autobiographer, a memoirista, a stand-up comedian, a teacher, a father, a husband, a man with no boundaries. Please welcome to the show, my hero and yours, the incredible, the beautiful, the fantastic, the tremendous, it's Mr. Romesh Ranganathan!
Wow, what an intro.
He's back, baby!
Yeah, very long intro. I liked it a lot. Stand-up comedian came so low down in the list of things, it was...
I did it backwards. It was order of importance. I actually opened with actor, which I realised if I've now put it in that order, maybe I should have thought about the beginning if I was working. But the point is, you're very good at both.
So, did you decide on that halfway through?
It always goes in reverse. But all of them are talents.
But you do it in reverse order. You said actor without hesitation.
I did open strong on actor.
Yeah. But it's basically intriguing guy. He's definitely worst at acting of all the things he does.
Yeah. And teaching was really high. And that's something you don't even do.
No,
so,
true.
A mixed bag. Romesh, I cannot tell you how excited I am to see you again. Thank you for coming back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a year.
Yeah, it's been a year.
It's been a year since you begged me to be on the show, and then I've now begged you to come back, and you did make it. You made it hard, and fair enough, because I made it hard the first time. And in many ways, we're even, but I did have to beg.
I wouldn't say you begged like I begged. I begged over a period of months. You had to send three texts. If that's what you classify as, if your level of required dignity is so high that you consider that begging, then fair enough.
That third text was desperate.
Do you know what the worst thing about the
fingers as I said it? Go on.
The worst thing about the first time I did this podcast is you and I sort of blindly speculating on what's going to happen to comedy without any real appreciation because of when we were talking about it, about how that was going to pan out. Do you remember? Yeah. I reckon we said we weren't going to do Zoom gigs or anything. Yeah. And since then, I reckon I've done 100.
I remember it. I remember the venom that, of which we spoke of the potential of doing Zoom gigs. And then this very attic where you see me now, me crawling around in front of my laptop. Love me! Into a camera, and then the vacuum of silence that ends when you finish a Zoom gig and you're just stood in your attic.
There were plus points and negative points to my Zoom gig experience. I had to do Zoom gigs because I was doing the show, The Ranganation, and I had to run the monologue. So I did it with James Gill, who always be comedy. The lovely, the legend that is James Gill, and the legendary night that is always be comedy. And he had like a front row in and stuff.
Yeah.
The thing about Zoom is, I think one of the lowest points I had early on, and I think everyone's had this, so I'm fully aware that this is sort of a cliche gig, sort of hack thing to say.
Bring it.
Was the moment when I was trying out new material, and then I said to them, after, like, I did a joke that I'd really, when I'd written it, I thought, this is so funny. And it was like this idea of, like, you know, the Save Our Summer 6, like Rishi Sunak and all that, they were sort of employed to save the summer last year. And I did a whole bit about them being a superhero group. And I ran this bit at the Zoom gig. And at the end of it, nothing happened. And I went, can everyone hear me? And everyone went, yeah. It was so horrible.
Oh, fuck
it. It was so rank.
Is my screen frozen? No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so horrible. And then the other thing, but the other thing was, I did a couple of corporate gigs on Zoom, and that thing where you finished, because you know corporate gigs are so soul destroying and horrible.
Yeah.
Or they can be. Sorry, they can be. They're not always, but I would say over 95% of the ones that I've done have been. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why they pay so much. They're literally paying to go. How much money will you take for a feeling of complete shame and self-loathing?
Yeah, totally. What people don't realise is there are a finite number of corporate gigs that your soul can withstand. So when you're being paid for that gig, what they're saying, that is a gig opportunity that's been taken away from you.
Yeah.
Did I tell you that I did one in Manchester once? You go to the hotel. I had to go to the hotel as a surprise guest, so I had to hide in the hotel room, pretty much. I wasn't allowed to wander around the hotel. And then they'd come and get me and take me down this back, like, secret route to the room. So they came to knock on my door, like, 10 minutes before I'm due to go on. They take me through, and the woman's briefing me about it. And I go, okay, cool, thanks. And then we get into the lift to go down to the gig, and she goes to me, can I ask you a question? I said, yeah, sure. She goes, do you actually want to be here? And I went, what? I went, sorry, yeah. She goes, it's just, I'm telling you what's going on tonight. She goes, you couldn't look less interested. She goes, it's a big event for us. And she goes, and I'm explaining it to you, and you just look utterly fed up. I was like, oh my God. I said to her, look, I said to her, I'm really sorry. I go, it's just how I am. I said, like, it's just my face and my voice and everything. I said, I do want to be here. But I don't know what she wanted. Do you know? The other thing is, you sort of go, "Sorry, are you arrogant enough to assume that I want to be here because I believe in the event, because I believe in the awards? Is that what you think I'm here for?"
The best screwdriver of 2020 award. Yeah, this has always been my dream.
Yeah, I've always wanted. My main thing is to be at the awards for the people that put music in adverts. Yes, please. I've waived the fee. That's how much I want to be here.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. But the thing about doing it on Zoom is, like, you do the corporate, You do this thing and it's like sort of horrible, as all gigs are, and then as all corporate gigs are, and then Zoom gig, and then just shut your laptop and you're in your house. It's an amazing thing. Mm. It's an it's not amazing. You know, the idea of shutting your laptop and being in your house being amazing is one of the biggest misuses of that word ever, probably. But yeah, you know what I mean.
I do find that the shutting the laptop after a Zoom gig is the weirdest feeling. Is when I felt most mad, because occasionally, only when you do Always Be Comedy, when you do an Always Be Comedy gig, sometimes it does feel like you get a tenth of what it's like to do a real gig, and it feels a buzz. Mm. But then you shut the laptop, and it's just a vacuum of silence in your attic. And not only do you think you're insane, but like you're also like, did that just happen? There's no evidence. It's like, I now just stood here, like I've time trapped, like I teleported. You know what I mean?
And oh, mate, suddenly... it's like you compare that. It's like when you go on tour or you do a gig or whatever. Yeah. You're in a room with loads of people, like laughing, and you know you're having a great time. You walk out and people are going, "Oh, mate, that was great." Blah blah blah. And then half an hour later, you're in your underwear eating a sandwich in a hotel. Like the contrast is so insane. Do you know what I mean? Like the number of times I've been sat in a hotel, sort of watching Netflix, sandwich in hand, in my underwear, and just sort of had a sort of a deliberate out of body experience. Just sort of feel sorry for yourself.
Yeah,
just sort of see yourself on your own.
It's so bleak. The sandwich in a hotel. The sandwich in a travelodge after smashing a gig is.
Oh, it's so rank. I mean, doing a corporate is so weird, because I've been doing a corporate and then shutting my laptop and then walking next door to join Lisa and the kids for a pasta dinner. It's just such a weird, transition. I feel like you need a bit more time for your head to get out of that narcissism mode of thinking that everybody needs to be facing you as you speak about something you've thought of. Do you know what I mean? I don't command that level of attention at the dinner table.
I've found if I see friends, if I see people after a gig, too soon after a gig, there hasn't been a sufficient gap of, say, an hour, that I'll arrive in sort of battle mode and I'll fucking, like, roast people quite aggressively. And I remember my friend saying to me, "Have you just finished a gig?" And I went, "Yeah, why?" And he went, "Because you're being fucking horrible." Like, someone like... "How you doing?" I'm like, "Yeah, nice haircut, dickhead." Whatever.
Yeah. "Great question for dinner, knobhead. Do you get all your conversation starters from generic conversation starters book? Yeah. 101. Did you learn to whisper in a helicopter, you cunt? Pass me the salt."
"What do? You work in the cows? Boring, you fucking cunt." "That's my new boyfriend, sorry."
"How long have you two been together?" "Oh, he doesn't know. He doesn't fucking know. He's not getting a blowjob tonight, is he? Wanker."
"IT, is it porn?" "Sorry." "Sorry, everyone. I'm delighted to be here. How much am I getting for this?" "You're at a party." "Oh, yeah, yeah." Here's another question. We talked, I'll tell you this, I don't even know if you'll be able to answer this, but I am genuinely always fascinated by it. So we talked about it last year in the fact of you involving, you know, the boundaries between your private life and your professional life. You make shows with your mum, you make shows with your brother, everyone's involved. And then during the pandemic, you started doing, Facebook Lives with your wife. God. Chatting and ask me a question. Here's my wife, here's my life. And I guess I find it, I want to know, at what point is something private to you?
Well, I've got to say, as first of all, as content generation goes, that's a low point for me, you know. No disrespect to my wife, but I think I was in the idea that me and Lisa sitting in front of our laptop talking.
I watched every day.
With no preparation. It's so narcissistic. And the thing is that the way that us comedians cope with the narcissism is we actually convince ourselves we're doing a public service. It's so tragic.
You were.
But it's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I do have things that are private. But like, I have, as we all do, sort of issues with anxiety and relationship issues and parenting issues and stuff like that. And so whenever I'm going through something, and by the way, I'm not putting myself on a pedestal or anything like that. I don't want that to come across like that. But like, whenever I hear somebody that I've seen on something or that I like the work of or whatever. You know, and I mean, like, if I see them talking about something that I've gone through or that I'm going through, I find it hugely reassuring. And so, like, when going through the thing that we're all, you know, going through lockdown or whatever, or going through whatever, you know, I've got anxiety, I've got a phobia of the dentist. I've just literally written an article about that, right? That to me, I just sort of think somebody is going to read that and go, fucking hell, that person, they go through that as well. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, the reason that I sort of got Lisa involved is one, that she hates it. And I found that like really enjoyable. But also, I feel like Lisa and I in this, like, I've been with Lisa for 12 years now, right? Mm. And I am deeply, deeply in love with her, right? And I feel like I love her more than I have ever done. But we're not in a textbook exciting part of our relationship. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, like, to give you an example, we went out ages ago. The last time we went out was ages ago, like as a couple, right? Mm. And I had a gig, and the reason it happened was by accident, because Lisa's supposed to be having a girls' night. I was doing a gig. We sorted a babysitter. Her girls' night fell through. So I said, why don't you come to the gig with me and we'll go out afterwards, right? She came to the gig. We're on our way back, and I said, I can't be asked to do dinner, can you? And she goes, I'm so glad you said that. I can't either. And then we said, but we've got to stay out for a bit, otherwise the babysitter's going to think we're a pair of fucking losers. So we went to a pub and had a drink for the amount of time that we thought it would take us to a point where we could go back and let the babysitter go home without it being embarrassing, right? And so, like, so you sort of go, and as we went in about 9:45, so you know, still tragic. And I sort of, as we go in, there's like a woman looking after our kids who's in her early 20s, and I felt conscious of the fact that I was giving her a bleak look into what a potential future might be. You know, like, it's not exciting. It's really fucking sad. And so you'd go, well, God, it sounds like you guys are in a rut, but we're not in a rut. Do you know what I mean? Like, I love Lisa, and I hope she loves me, and it's fun. It's like the most fun bit of our relationship I've ever been in. Do you know what I mean? So it's that thing of talking about that. I don't know. I'm giving you a big excuse for doing Facebook videos without any preparation, really. But I just find it interesting talking about it.
No, I genuinely fucking love it. And I think, and actually that story, in all seriousness, is actually very romantic and lovely and tells us a lot about it. I think I find you endlessly fascinating because I know I'm basically the opposite in terms of...
I know you are. You're very guarded.
It's everything very separate. Yeah. And I just find it fascinating. And also there's absolutely... I love it. Like, I genuinely watched your Facebook lives, I think, every day. And what you're saying is, I loved it. Like, it did. I found it comforting. I enjoyed checking in on your marriage. But I also just always thought, like, what if, I mean, hopefully, I'm assuming nothing particularly bad happens. But I did think, what if one day you had like a massive argument and you were like, suddenly the Facebook live wasn't there, that we'd all become so comforted by it. It's like, oh, shit, things are, you know, it's like almost like a reality TV show. Like, where have they gone? I've become so dependent on them.
You'd have to just be honest, wouldn't you, and go,
yeah,
if I had a massive argument, chances are it was my fault.
thanks for answering that. It's a tricky one. Also, one last thing before we, you know, do the sort of meat of it, is you've only won another BAFTA, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Lovely stuff. Well done, mate.
Yeah, got that little thing locked away.
Congratulations, that's fucking cool.
Thanks very much.
I love it. I love you winning BAFTAs. I'm all for
Thanks,
it. I want you to win all of them.
Do you sometimes feel like those awards, it's a bit unfair that you get awarded for stuff like that? Because I don't want to sound all wanky or whatever, but like, we shouldn't be getting awards, should we? Do you know what I mean?
I do feel a bit like, do you remember the Seinfeld did a thing about...
Yeah. I remember that, yeah.
I always think about that. He was like, comedians should be at the back slagging off awards, not winning them. And it's like, yeah, I do know what you mean.
But yeah. You feel like, and I sort of hesitate saying this word, it's a validation, and we shouldn't need validation. We absolutely shouldn't. And that's why I sort of hesitate saying that word. But it's an external validation for something you do.
Where's yours? Where's your BAFTAs?
Well, the first one, I don't know where it is. The second one, the one I just got...
very grateful, man.
Yeah, no, I'm very grateful. But it's the thing of winning... It's not the physical.
Great.
It's not the physical... The physical trophy is not what you're excited about, is it? But the second one I brought down... My mum actually did quite a... She came round And she asked for a photo with the BAFTA, which I did. I took a photo of her with the BAFTA. And then she posted the photo. And then somebody said, did you take it home with you? Right? And then my mum replied, he wouldn't let me. Like, she didn't ask me, right? She didn't ask if she could take it home. She could have done. Yeah. And then underneath was all these comments about, oh, that's very ungrateful. Bearing in mind that, you know, you're one of the main reasons she's ended up... Like, all of her friends started piling in. She's like, I'm getting... Like, this, you've managed to turn a BAFTA win into a situation where I'm getting absolutely fucking coated off on your Facebook. It's mental. I actually ended up... This is so sad. I actually ended up replying, going, Mum, it's not true. You could have it as long as you want. And then she came around and she goes, well, we never talked about it. I said, yeah, because why would you talk about... Why would that come up? Why would I bring that up? You come round to ask for a photo of my BAFTA and go, Mum, do you want to take it home for a bit? What a weird thing to suggest.
He wouldn't let me take it home. He's an ungrateful little shit.
What? Yeah, that's what happened. That's genuinely what happened. Anyway.
Ramesh Ranganathan, you have been brought back to life because I like you. But what time of your life would you like to come back to? To today or earlier? Any regrets you'd like to fix? Make your decision.
No. Oh, right. No, oh, right, yeah. No, I'll come back today. I've got no regrets.
Really?
I've got no.
That's surprising.
Well, I mean, there are things I regret doing, but I'd come back today, but maybe ask to be slightly more attractive or something.
Hey, if I may say, as far as I can tell, I ain't seen you for a bit. You look fit as fuck.
Well, it's very kind of you to say, but...
Look like you've been working out.
Well, that's very kind of you. That's also very kind of you to say. What that is setting a very low bar about a year ago. That's the diet plan I can recommend. Do you allow yourself to balloon to a point?
Yeah.
Where even in t-shirts you look like you've got your top off because they're so they're so snug. And then you get yourself to a point where that normal people would call sort of average, and then they go, "Fucking hell, you look great. You look great." But actually, what you just said is, you look like shit a year ago. That's basically what you just said. Are you allowed to? I don't know. Are you allowed to compliment people on their weight now? Like, because
I don't know. And it's a good point. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
That wasn't me having a go at you.
No, I know.
It totally wasn't me. But like, apparently, I don't know. There's been a rule change, isn't there? An official rule change about stuff like this.
Yeah, you're not. You're not supposed to notice anymore. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what the rule is.
Or if you say to somebody you look great because they've lost weight,
yeah,
I think what you're supposed to do. Well, this is all freestyling by me now.
Go on.
I think what you're supposed to go is, were you meaning to lose weight? And then they go, yeah. I don't know.
What you're meant to go? Sorry to notice, but has there been a terrible accident because you're suddenly very slim? Are you okay? Is that you
and
mean
then
like
if
that?
They and then if they go, yes, I deliberately wanted to lose weight to look better.
Then you go,
oh, you look success. Great.
Right. But if they say, I'm actually grieving and I've just not been eating and I'm very sad, you go,
you look great.
I can.
You go, in the past, you would have said something like, well, loss suits you. And I'm not talking about weight. But that also suits you.
Also, you're single now, clearly, because of the whole grief thing. What are you up to later? Because this new thing is...
Yeah. You have made yourself easily pick upable again.
I think that's fine.
Yeah, all of that. You can't say that. That's how you and I would behave at a funeral in the past. You can't do that anymore.
Can't do it. It's a different time.
Yeah.
Now you just have to say sorry for your loss. Now you actually have to say sorry for your loss and I haven't noticed anything about your weight.
Yeah, correct.
But that's a lovely hat.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you've come back to life. Everyone's delighted to see you. Big fans.
Yeah.
But what they want to talk about is your life through film, sort of, and stuff. And the first question they ask you is, what was the last film you saw, Ramesh?
The last film I saw... I assume, by the way, I know that we do this thing where I'm dead and then I've just come back to life. But, I mean, theoretically, I would have seen this film during, like, while I was dead. You know, like...
Well, it's an excellent point, and you've chosen to come back today rather than like a week ago where perhaps you saw a film in this last week. So you've made this difficult.
Oh, I see. Okay, so this is actually my fault. This format flaw is my fault, is it?
Yeah, the format is flawless. It's your choice to You know, you're arrogant, like, and you've lived a perfect life and have no regrets.
No, you're right. I should have said a week ago, because the only thing I regret, I did less than a week ago. You're absolutely right. Okay. What an arsehole I am. Anyway.
Yeah.
If I did come back a week ago, I could tell you that the last film I saw was The Conjuring 3, The Devil Made Me Do It.
How is it? I'm a fan of The Conjurings, but I've not seen the third one yet. Love a Conjuring. How was it?
Well, first of all, I had no idea what a massive franchise the Conjuring films are. They're like up there, aren't they? With like one of the biggest franchises ever, right?
They're the Marvel of horrors.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm a Conjuring fan. I skip The Nun, but I'm a bit. What I would say about The Conjuring 3, first of all, it's difficult for me to give you a fully unbiased opinion because it was my first time back in the cinema in like a year and a half, maybe 2 years. And I was incredibly excited to just be at cinema.
Who'd you go with?
I went with Yasmin Akram. Do you know Yasmin Akram?
Yeah.
Ah,
I see.
Well, I hadn't seen her for ages. I got invited to go and watch Conjuring 3. So I said to Yasmin, this feels like the perfect time for us to catch up. Let's have dinner and go watch Conjuring 3. And during dinner, she revealed that she doesn't like horror films, but she wanted to give it a go. This is the thing. I don't know how you watch horror films, and I think I talked about this after I died with you, but I'm really bad at watching horror films. Like, as in, I'm bad for other people around me antisocial because I react, I move, I put my hood up, all that kind of stuff. I find it very difficult to not sort of viscerally react to what I'm seeing. I find it terrifying. But I still enjoy it. So Yasmin was the same because she's not really a horror fan. So both of us were kind of like really squirming and stuff. And then you're sort of looking around the theatre and other people are just sitting there, completely passive. And it feels like, to me, it feels like they've got a superpower. I don't understand how you can't be moving in your seat and stuff. Like, and look, the Conjuring 3, if you wanted a quick review of it, the first third of it is excellent. It's incredible. Yeah. Not incredible is a too strong word. It's excellent.
Yeah.
It's very derivative of The Exorcist. There's a exorcism scene right at the beginning that's just, homage would be underplaying it, right? Like, in terms of what they're doing. But it's like, great. And then it sort of turns into a very conventional kind of thing. But still enjoyable. It had bought my goodwill from being so sort of exciting. And also, but I was in the cinema for the first time, so I was really excited. But I just kept doing all of the watching through my fingers and all that stuff. And, you know, it does all of the jump scares that actually I'm a complete prick for falling for and enjoying, it turns out. You know, like where, you know, that classic, you hear a noise.
Yeah.
Or somebody approaches something, it's the cat. He goes, oh, gosh, that was a nightmare. Then you wait 3 seconds and then the actual thing. I fall for that every fucking time. Like every single time I find that unbelievable.
Being in the cinema, it's fucking great, isn't it, to be back in the cinema?
Oh, God, it's amazing, man.
Yeah.
Like, amazing. I felt angry with myself for having taken it for granted for so long. You know, it's just fucking great. You and a load of strangers go and sit in a room and watch a film being presented to you with amazing vision and sound.
Yeah.
And you're eating with this, and the group reacts, although they didn't in this case, because they're sort of fucking hardcore lunatics. Yeah, it's so good, man. I loved it. Properly loved it.
I like that. All right. Well, I'm glad you came back a week ago. Ramesh, who do you think should play you in the film of your life?
I think I would like to go for Taron Egerton. And let me tell you why. He's a very good actor. Well, that's exactly why. I'm going for him. I've seen him play Eddie the Eagle Edwards.
Yeah.
I've seen him play Eggsy in The Kingsman. I've seen him play Elton John in Rocket Man.
Yeah.
He's a very versatile actor.
Yeah.
I think he's one of the world's most gifted actors. Like, he's utterly convincing in everything he's done. I would like to see if his career survives Browning Up. if his performance could be that compelling that he could pull that off. That's a true test of an actor, I think.
Listen, Robert Downey Jr. so far is the only actor who has survived Blacking Out.
How did Robert Downey Jr. survive that? I've not got a problem with how he survived that, because I get it. But like, it is an interesting one, isn't it?
It is interesting. Every time I see a clip of it, I'm still like, wow. Every time I literally go out loud to myself, wow. Every time.
I'd like to think it's because people sort of see the joke and sort of get that it's not, you know, get that it's coming from a slightly different place to how it might have done in the past. But what I honestly think it is it's because people really like Iron Man. I genuinely think that.
He also got nominated for an Oscar for it. That's the thing, is you go, it wasn't just that people went, we're okay with this. It's that people went, this is the best thing that's ever happened. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it is fascinating.
Wow.
It is fascinating. Yeah. But I think Taron Egerton could pull it off.
I agree.
You know, at the end of... Have you seen Rocket Man?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah, loved it, yeah.
The opening 30 seconds... Well, the whole thing. But the opening 30 seconds when he leaves the counselling session to start singing I'm Still Standing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've watched that on YouTube. I reckon... Well, I don't want to exaggerate. Probably about 5 or 6 times. But the point I'm trying to make is I sort it out. Do you know what I mean? It's so good. It's so, so good. I love it. I love Taron Egerton.
Yeah, him browning up and acting out scenes with your mum, who I hope will be played by another white person browning up. And just seeing that, I would seek that out on YouTube 5 or 6 times at least.
I mean, look, if we're being honest, the obvious choice, and this would be the choice that that if you were to do a poll, people would suggest is Himesh Patel.
Yeah.
Because... when Yesterday came out, the number of text messages I got from people going, oh, I really enjoyed you in Yesterday. And also, when I started doing stand-up, one of the heckles I got more than any was Tamwar, because that's who he played in EastEnders. So, you know, that would be the route one choice, but not route one. I don't mean route one. Himesh Patel is not a route one choice. It's an excellent choice.
He's an excellent actor.
What I mean. Taron's
the exciting choice in terms of... Sure. There's a lot more stakes and jeopardy in that.
Yeah, there's a lot more stakes for everybody involved in the making of the film.
Yeah.
Sort of when they're doing the press junket, do you know what I mean? Like,
will he get an Oscar nom or cancelled? It's a real... thrill ride.
Yeah, yeah. And when sort of... let's have a think who this might be. When Nicole Kidman is defending herself for browning up to play Shanti. I wonder if she might distance herself from the movie. Do you know what I mean?
Later she'll be so good at it, though, as well. Like, have you ever seen Destroyer? Like, the things she did to her face with that makeup artist in Destroyer, like her turning into your mum. I think she could do it. I think she's a good enough actor. And I actually think your mum would be happy with the portrayal.
I think she would. I really think she would.
God, is it exciting. Really,
yeah, it's really exciting.
I'm looking forward to it. What's the... You're a romantic man, Romesh. What's the most romantic film you've ever seen?
Well, look, I talked about this film the last time I was on the podcast, and that was Eternal Sunshine. Mm. But if you want me to go super romantic, it's probably Kuch Kuch Hota Hai. Do you know that film?
No, I'm afraid I don't.
You don't know Kuch Kuch Hota Hai? Huh? Are you being serious?
Yeah, yeah.
You do a movie podcast, dude.
Yeah, so
Kuch Kuch Hota Hai is a Bollywood film. I watched it years ago.
Go on.
The reason I watched it is because at Crawley Cinema, they have Bollywood presentations of films because of the ethnic makeup of the town, I guess. You don't get it everywhere. And so my mum didn't have anyone to go and watch Kuch Kuch Hota Hai with. And so I went to watch... I know it sounds like I'm just trying to say Kuch Kuch Hota Hai as many times as I can, but I'm not. Genuinely, I did go to watch Kuch Kuch Hota Hai with my mum. It was just me and my mum on a day watching Kuch Kuch Hota Hai. And it stars Shah Rukh Khan, who obviously, and Kajol. And it's just like a very super romantic film. My recollection of it was that it was about 3 hours long. And... I can't even really remember what it was about, to be honest with you. I don't even know what Kuch Kuch Hota Hai means. But I know that... I think Kuch... Let me just look it up. I just need to look this up. Because I think it means Something Happens.
That is an amazing title for a film. What's your pitch? Something Happens.
Oh, it's Something Strange is Happening. So I'm going to read to you the lyrics in English of the title track, okay? And this should give you an idea of why it's such a romantic film. You came close, then you smiled. You don't even know what dreams you showed me. You came close, then you smiled. You don't even know... I shouldn't have read that twice, really. I thought it was going to change. Now my heart remains awake, neither awake nor sleeps. What do I do? Oh, something strange is happening. You came close, then you... This can't be the verse, can it? Then you smile. You don't even know what dreams you showed me. Now my heart remains neither awake nor sleeps. Now, what do I do? Oh, something strange is happening. So it's something strange is
something
happening.
Could you hold that hit?
That means something strange is happening, which I assume is
can
falling
you sing
in
the
love.
Whole song, please?
I can't sing the whole song, but I know that the chorus goes, could you hold that hair? Something like that. It's a beautiful song. I remember it being a beautiful film. All Bollywood films are very romantic, aren't they?
Yeah. What's it called again?
Kuch hota hai.
That is really wonderful, and I will be checking it out.
Make sure, listen, guys, if people listening to this, make sure you watch Kuch Kuch Hota Hai, because Kuch Kuch Hota Hai is one of my favourite...
romantic dates you had with your mum.
Yeah, when people say, what's the favourite film you watch with your mum, or sort of against your will, I always say Kuch Kuch Hota Hai, because Kuch Kuch Hota Hai is the film, is one of the only films, I would say. So on a list of two films, Kuch Kuch Hota Hai and Jurassic Park.
What a romantic double bill.
It was actually a double bill. It was the same afternoon. It was Kuch Kuch Hota Hai, Jurassic Park, back to back.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ramesh, what's the best film you ever saw that you never want to see again?
The best film I ever saw that I never want to see again is Shawshank Redemption.
Go the fuck on.
It's a great movie, right?
Yeah, great movie.
It's very quotable. I enjoyed it very much. The performances are excellent. It's a brilliant film. But if I was in any context, I think, if I was at home alone with my wife, if I was with some friends... if I was with a mate and we were a bit drunk and we wanted to fall asleep to something, if any of those contexts somebody suggested Shawshank Redemption, I would say, why the fuck would you want to do that? Because the idea of enjoying sitting down to watch that again just fucking blows my mind. I can't even begin to imagine a set of circumstances where I'd say, do you know what would really hit the spot now? Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
You know, and... I love it. It was a great film. Loved it. Do you want to watch it again? No, thank you. Do you want to talk about it? Yeah, I'll talk about it if that means that we don't have to sit and watch it again. Absolutely.
My favourite part of that, of your story in the sort of average scenarios in which you watch a film is how often it must be that you have a mate over and want something to go to sleep to.
Do you know what? As I said it, I just thought, this isn't a typical scenario that you'd find yourself in.
Do you want to come over and have a nap?
Yeah.
We'll have a sleep
Sorry,
together.
Rom. Sorry, Rom. I was under the... Do you know, I listened to Brett Goldstein's film podcast, and I'd always been under the impression that Romesh was a 43-year-old father of three, but I think he might be a 12-year-old boy.
Yeah, sleepovers. He has sleepovers with his mate. Do you want to come round and we could just fall asleep watching a film together? Okay, mate.
Why did I say that?
I really love it.
Do you know what? I'm glad you called it out, because as I said it, I just thought...
No, I'm just annoyed you've never invited me over for a movie sleepover.
I've never invited anybody over for a sleepover. It's never come up.
I want to come over.
Sorry, Brett, I live with my wife and children. How weird would it be?
That's what I was wondering.
Brett's coming over tonight. He's coming over for dinner. He wants to have a few drinks, so he's probably going to stay over. Do you mind if you sleep on your own and I'm going to join Brett in whatever room he's sleeping in?
Yeah, Brett's bringing two sleeping bags and a DVD of Kuchikuchota.
Yeah. Oh my god, I can't believe it. I'll tell you what other film, actually, more recently than Shawshank Redemption. I don't know if I ever want to watch the Joker movie again.
Like, that's totally fair. That is not a fun film.
I went to watch it with Jen Brister.
Right.
We were on tour. Went to watch it with Jen Brister and Grazia Abella, tour manager extraordinaire. Mm-hmm. And as we came out, I said that was a really great film. But I feel truly terrible. I mean, I feel absolutely awful having watched it. Everything about it was great, but I definitely feel worse than I did before I went into the cinema.
Yeah. It still shocks me how successful that film was when it's such a... It's horrible. It's a horrible... Yeah. It's a really grim...
It's an awful, awful film.
Depressing in terms of hours.
Yeah, yeah, so depressing. Yeah.
What's the best action film you've ever seen?
Well, I don't know how controversial this answer is because it is completely humourless and sort of good action films do have a bit of humour in them, don't they? But for me, it's probably The Raid. Have you seen The Raid?
Great answer. It's a great answer. It's a very, very, very good
action
film.
Is it a great answer?
It's a very good action film. You can't. I mean, you're right. There's zero laughs in it. But in terms of action, you go, yeah, it's pretty fucking good.
Yeah, because, like, you know, I know that like when I think about the films I watched growing up, you know, it'd be like Commando, you know, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, would have like a bazooka on his shoulder and then he'd go, you look like you need a rocket up you. And then he'd like fire it. And that's funny. Those things are funny. Do you know what I mean? The Raid doesn't have any of that.
No.
And also my other issue with The Raid is it killed Judge Dredd.
Yeah, which I only watched the other day and is very good. And is The
Judge,
Raid.
That Judge Dredd movie is great, right?
Yeah, it's really
so good. And if The Raid hadn't have existed, that would have been the teeing off point for probably a really lackluster sequel.
For a really dragged out Dredd universe that got progressively worse.
They've got to go down instead of up because that's what they thought the twist would be for this. But yeah, the reason I say The Raid is like because it's totally humorless. There's nothing about the dialogue. There's some really cool bits in it. Like when the crime boss at the top of the building does the Tannoy announcement going, we've got some visitors, do whatever you want to them, have fun or whatever. It's really fucking chilling. Like you sort of think, oh my God, like, you know, it's proper. I don't know I can't see a way that this ends anything other than all of them dying horribly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And for most of them, that is the case. Yeah. But like, it's so good. But the fucking action is just... I'd never seen action like it before. I'd just never, ever seen anything like it before I watched that film. I could not believe it, man. It's crazy. How do you write that?
That's a great question. How do you write that? I don't know what that looks like on the page. Yeah.
You know, like, you know, because I know you've written loads of... You're a great writer. When you write the stage directions or whatever, you sort of go, int, cafe, there are two chairs. Like, The Raid must have been a three-page script.
That's the thing. I genuinely don't know if there's lots of examples of films and stuff where it will say, like, they make love and then that scene will be a five-minute sex scene or they fight. Or some people do write, he hits him, he ducks, you go, fucking hell, that's... He rolls under him, he jumps up a wall. He kicks him in the face. Blood comes out of his eyeball. It's up to you.
Yeah. For 20 minutes, they kick seven shades of shit out of each other.
Yeah. Great. I think that's a very good answer, Romesh, actually.
I can never tell with you. You're quite a difficult bloke to read. If I gave you an answer you didn't agree with or you thought was a terrible answer, what would you say?
I'd go, okay, next question. I'd go like that.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. So you wouldn't disguise it at all, really, would you?
Romesh Ranganathan, of all the films, if you had to, which film do you think you could have made and why? I.e., what film represents the kind of film you think you'd make if you were making a film?
For me?
Yeah, for you.
I would say Planes, Trains and Automobiles. Now, before I continue with that, I don't think I could have made it to that standard. Steve Martin's character in that film is everything I think my comedy fails to do. You know, that...
Everything
that
your comedy aspires to.
Yeah, that's what I mean, isn't it? Yeah.
Is it more,
it's trying to be, but it's trying to be, but can't be. I mean, that film is so funny, obviously. But Steve Martin's kind of reactions to John Candy are note perfect, throughout. And the journey from him coming on side to sort of showing John Candy's character a bit of empathy, it's so beautifully done. You don't ever feel like you're being manoeuvred through that. John Candy's journey is amazing. I mean, John Candy, you know, we can talk for ages about how great he was, but just they're both amazing. But Steve Martin in particular, his character in that film, I just find it incredible. And I watched Due Date, and Due Date's a really good film. It's a similar thing. The difference with Due Date, I think Zach Galifianakis is amazing, and Robert Downey Jr. is obviously very funny, but Robert Downey Jr., you feel like he's being too horrible to Zach Galifianakis in a way that you never feel with Planes, Trains.
Yeah,
you know, like Planes, Trains, like Steve Martin is horrible to him. He does some horrible things to John Candy, but you always kind of buy it. Do you know what I mean? You sort of go, it's a bit out of order, but I get how you've got to this point. You know, like, whereas with Robert Downey Jr., there's a few things he does where you just think, you're an arsehole, man. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's like really shitty. And so then it's slightly, for me personally, it slightly undermined the redemption at the end of that. Do you know what I mean?
This is such a good answer, and actually is really revealing and interesting. And now I realise that all your TV shows, your mum is John Candy, and you're going on journeys with her, sort of half against your will and half empathetic, and sort of
Yeah, maybe. You know, there's two options here. Either the reason I like Steve Martin's performance in that so much is because it just connects to my soul in some way, or everything I do is completely derivative of that performance, and actually I haven't had an original thought since I've started doing comedy. It's one of those two.
It's either or.
Yeah. And whichever one of those you think it is, you're correct.
You know? I'm now thinking, I guess we can't, because sadly he's no longer with us. But if Nicole Kidman doesn't want to play your mum, we could have had
John Candy. Yeah, that's a great shot.
That's a really, that is genuinely, fair play, all jokes aside, it's a very, very interesting, revealing answer. I appreciate it. I had 10 points for that, and I wasn't going to score this one, but I've started.
Okay, it feels weird that you brought scoring into the sixth question of this.
Yeah.
Of the second podcast.
Yeah, it's weird that you're starting to actually rack up a score now. What's the film you have pretended to like to impress people?
Thin Red Line.
I love Thin Red Line, but yes, there's a level of you have to not, when you talk about Thin Red Line, you have to not complain about the fact that it was 3.5 hours and very fucking slow.
So I went to watch Thin Red Line with some friends, and I sat in the film, and I'm just going to be absolutely honest with you, Thin Red Line is an objectively very well made great film and all of that, and I don't at me or anything like that, but I sat there and all I could think of is this film is constant reminder that life is finite. I can't believe I'm fucking watching this. I can't believe, with what we know about existence, I'm spending 3.5 hours watching this. I am so fucking bored. Like, so bored. This is how bored I was. I don't think it mattered which way I was facing in that theatre in terms of my level of interest of what was going on. I was so completely bored by that film. And I didn't say anything because I'm not going to ruin the film for other people. So I sat there with my friends expecting to have a conversation with them about how we regretted going to watch Thin Red Line and we should never let the person who chose to watch that film ever choose a film ever again. And then I come outside of the cinema, everybody else loved it. Oh my God, it's so good, isn't it? And you have to sort of, listen, it pays your attention. You know, you stay with it, you give it focus, and it rewards you. And I'm just like, not only do I disagree with you, it makes me look like a fucking idiot if I do disagree with you now. Yeah. So now I have to go, Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah. You know, because, like, I'm so sick of films that have a thing happen every few minutes to just try and keep you in. You know, I prefer it when a film is actually moving slower than my normal life. I love that. So yeah, absolutely great. Yeah, totally.
What's funny is your what you took from the film that life is finite is genuinely also the message of the film. You really got it.
Oh my God, I hated that fucking evening. Honestly, I really hated it so bad. And do you know what the thing is? By the way, before people sort of, I don't know how vocal or vociferous your listeners are.
The Thin Red Line Twitter community is pretty powerful.
Yeah, small but very passionate, aren't they?
And mean.
I'm not saying it's a bad film, and I'm saying the fault is with me, guys. Okay, the fault is with me. I'm describing to you the experience I had, and what I felt when I sat and watched that film was anger, not about the conflict, not about things that people had to go, not about war and the futility of it. About the fact I was spending the evening in the cinema watching it, okay? So.
What film have you never seen that you think it's mad you've never seen it?
I've never seen Trainspotting.
That is mad. What's the film you love that you don't expect anyone else to like?
Is that a terrible answer?
No, that's a great answer. Completely mad. What's the film you love?
Do you normally open a discussion off the back of that? No. Okay, good. Move on. It's just the way that you responded to that was remarkably like when I asked you what you'd do if you didn't like an answer. That's all. I would say it's almost identical. So in terms of my kind of self-esteem.
Oh, no, it's a really good answer. It's completely mad.
How could it be a good answer?
Because it's a perfect answer, because everyone's seen Trainspotting and it's like seminal and you haven't seen it. That's mad. You've answered the question perfectly. What's the film you love that you don't expect anyone else to like?
Transformers the movie, the original animated version.
Oh, that the good one. Good answer.
The good one. Is that good?
I think that's good. I like the animated one, and I hold my hands up. I've done stand-up about this. I saw the new Transformers, and I don't think I'm thick, but I genuinely did not understand it. And at the end felt like I'd watched an art film that was beyond me. I was like, I don't know what the fuck was going on.
The Transformers, the Michael Bay Transformers movies, right? I, of all of the films, and I've watched all of them, right? I understood the first 20 minutes of the first one, right? Yeah. And after that, it's completely fucking impenetrable. And do you know what else is impenetrable? What the fuck is going on when they're fighting? I have got no idea who's hitting who. I've got no idea who's winning. I've got no idea which character's involved in the fight. I don't understand any of the dialogue of any of the robots. Like it's mental. It's absolutely mental. It's like, I honestly believe that Michael Bay said, they had a private meeting and he said, I want to take the biggest shit I can on people's childhoods. Like the biggest shit. And I want it to make money. And you to keep asking me to make sequels. And they've gone, Michael Bay, we can make that happen for you.
Anything you like.
They are terrible.
I don't think I've talked about it on the podcast. Maybe I have. Apologies if I have. But the end of Transformers, if I followed it correctly, the film ends with Shia LaBeouf and Megan Fox having sex on top of his car. But his car is his mate. His car is a Transformer that he talks to and is friends with. And he's just sat there like, you're having sex on top of me. Why? Do you not remember I can talk and see and move?
Yeah. I can't have sex if a dog is in the building, right? You're on top of your friend, right? Like,
I come round for a sleepover to watch the Bollywood film with you, and I fall asleep and I wake up and you've brought Lisa in to have sex on top of my back.
Yeah.
That's the end of Transformers.
Yeah. It's so... And also, Shia LaBeouf on something... I'm a big fan of Shia LaBeouf, but
he's a very good actor.
They need to address what episode he's supposed to be going through during that film. I assume there is some longer version of that where it's like a nightclub scene and he takes some MDMA or something and he never comes down from it. And that's why he is how he is.
Yeah.
Because otherwise there's no explanation for any of what happens there. The redesigns and all the robots are awful. I understand. I understand that you can't stick to stick like religiously to the source material would be crazy. I get that. But, you know, they all look so crazy. You know, there's a bit, I don't know if it's in the first one or the second one, but they've got like Devastator in it, where all the Constructicons like unite to form this big robot. And it's got like two wrecking balls as a ball bag. Why? Why? So mad.
For I guess that so he's gag, got a, so that Transformer has a vulnerability.
I guess so. There's so much wrong with it. The animated film,
yes,
which I loved at the time, and I would happily sit and watch now, but would never ask any, like even at a sleepover, I wouldn't suggest it. But it was actually really cynically, you know, the origins of it are so cynical and horrible that they just wanted to make more toys. They wanted to make a new generation of toys. So they thought, let's kill Ratchet, let's kill Ironhide. You know, Ironhide gets smoked within the first... Ironhide, like a beloved member of the Autobots, gets smoked within 3 minutes of the opening of the film, right? Nothing. Optimus Prime dies. They just kill everyone because they want to bring out a new range of toys. And they had no idea about the psychological effects that was going to have upon the children of the world because people weren't ready to see Optimus Prime die. They weren't ready to see Ultra Magnus step up like some sort of... You know, the Ultra Magnus thing. Do you know Ultra Magnus? Do you know what I'm talking about? Ultra Magnus?
Yeah. The Ultra of the Magnuses.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Thank you for that. So, Ultra Magnus, right? Yeah. Optimus Prime is a truck, okay? Yeah. A red truck turns into a robot. Ultra Magnus is a trailer, right? Turns into a trailer, and the truck is like an Optimus Prime, but it's like his little assistant. What the fuck is going on? Like at the time as a kid, I thought this is mental. I didn't get it at all. And then Hot Rod, who became Rodimus Prime, which is like something you'd fucking get on a Pornhub search.
Yeah, that's a lovely
mental
title.
Yeah. Anyway,
Rodimus Prime,
and he's fishing at the beginning of it. It's weird. Hot Rod's fishing. Anyway, there's lots. I could talk to you about it loads, but you know.
Well, that's why we're here.
Do you remember Blaster?
Go on. Which one's Blaster?
So Soundwave, who I thought was like the coolest of the Decepticons, was a tape cassette player, and then he opened his chest, and then one of them had come out and turned into a hawk, and another one had come out and turned into Rumble, and he could create earthquakes and stuff. Do you remember that? Do you remember all that? And Soundwave didn't talk with any emotion, so he'd like, Soundwave present. I can't do the robotic voice, but he would just talk with no emotion at all. And then they decided that the Autobots should have like their own version, and it was Blaster. And he was just like this really cocky black guy for some reason. Is that Optimus Prime? Do you read me? We're under attack from the Decepticons. We don't know how much longer we're going to hold out. It's like that. It was like the fucking polar opposite of Soundwave. It was so weird. Such a number of weird decisions. But I love that film. It's great. Unicron, the big planet that transforms into a robot.
That was some Wells.
Orson Welles, yeah. Leonard nice Nimoy film. Played Galvatron.
Heck of a
cast,
there's
so many good, so many good things about that film.
Lovely answer, and I'm going to give you 12 points for it. What's the film you would show a lover as a test to see if you should be together?
Okay, can I just say I sort of fundamentally oppose this question?
Right, like, you can say
when people say things like, so I showed her this. I'm sorry, but if you don't like that film, we just can't be in a couple. How many options have you got? The fucking arrogance of it, I find incredible. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know how much I love hip-hop. Lisa hates hip-hop, and really? I'm with her. Do you know why? Because I've got no choices. Do you know what I mean? What do I do? Go on the search for someone who loves hip-hop because she's not quite perfect enough for me. Who the fuck do I think I am? Do you know what I mean?
Well, you've been, you know, if I can say, maybe you're grieving, but you seem to have lost a lot of weight.
However, if I was forced to show a lover as a film, as a test, to see if we should be together, it would be Trading Places.
Ooh, okay.
Now, there's a number of reasons for this. One, I think it's a very funny film. Okay, it's a great movie. But there are a number of things that I would sort of look to see. You know, if we're seeing this as like an assessment of a lover, okay. Now, yeah. Trading Places, as you know, great film. Eddie Murphy, Randolph. The brothers decide whether they're going to switch these two guys, Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy, to see if circumstance determines your outcomes, right, rather than, you know, what you're made of. I, to this day, still do not understand the ending of that film. I've watched that film easily 100 times. I do not fucking know what them getting that briefcase with the orange juice predictions and them buying and selling it in the way. I don't know why that makes them really rich and makes everybody else really poor. I've read up on it. I've watched it back with a view to only focusing on that ending bit to see if I get it. I still don't understand it. And genuinely, if somebody can message me telling me what the fuck that ending means, I've talked about it to so many people.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I don't get it. I don't get how they end up on that island at the end because of the money they've made from screaming sell at a
something
certain moment.
Something to do with beans or something, right?
Yeah.
It's beans.
Yeah.
It's to do with beans.
The OJ, the orange crop isn't what they thought it was going to be. And now Eddie Murphy's a millionaire. If somebody can join the dot, fill in the blanks there. That
so
would
you
be
want
amazing.
Your lover, you want them to A, enjoy the film, and B, be able to explain it to you.
Well, that's the first thing. So if they understand the ending to that film,
Marry them.
That's a level of intelligence and perception that I certainly don't have. Yeah. And neither does anyone I've asked this about. The other test would be the hugely, unacceptably racist train scene where Eddie Murphy... it's so racist that what Eddie Murphy does is racist. Right, that's how racist that section of the movie is, where he plays such a stereotypically African character. It's fucking insane. It's so racist. And then, as if to say, oh, hey, Eddie, you know that we don't like black people being the most racist people in films in Hollywood, Dan Aykroyd steps in as... that we talked about Robert Downey Jr. earlier.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd has not been cancelled for this, as far as I know, right?
No. He's fine. He's doing off menu.
He appears in the... Yes, exactly right. He turns up on the train as a Rasta. Now, you can talk about it's a sign of the times or whatever. I didn't see that happening anywhere else in any movies at that time. So...
Hang on. This is really complicated. So your lover, I'm your lover. In this scenario, I'm your lover. I've come round. You go, things are going well. I'd like you to watch this film just as a sort of test. But I'm thinking, right.
But I wouldn't announce it as a test. I would just put the film. I'd go, I really like this film. Do you fancy watching Trading Places?
So the test, it's quite a complicated test and I like it because it really reveals. You're basically saying, am I going to sit through this film? And because I like you, just go, yeah, I loved it. It was so funny. But what you're actually, your perfect result is that I go, I've got to be honest, Ramesh, I enjoyed lots of that film. However, I don't understand the ending. The scene on the train was incredibly racist and I don't stand by it. I cannot believe Dan Aykroyd's been cancelled. And I can't explain to you the ending. But other than that, I really enjoyed it. Eddie Murphy's very funny. If I say those things...
You're sort of boiling it down to a sort of a post-movie monologue. What I would say is, like, during the racist bit, like, you know, I might go...
You want me to go...
Like, I think so. Something like that. Like, I want to enjoy this, but this is making me feel a bit funky. Something like that. Just something. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Something
like, or you might go, do you know what? This is a bit off key, but it was of the time. And so, or, you know, we'll have to ride this out, but I'm not massively keen on it.
Okay. So how about this, right? I say all the things. I even explain the ending to you. I go, it was about beans or something. I explain it in a way that makes you... think I know what it's about, right? So then you're like, this person is so intelligent, so wonderful. This person gets me and is better than me, right? We start kissing, we start making love. We get in that sleeping bag I brought over. Then I go, oh, before we lay down to sleep, can we put on my film I want to show you, The Thin Red Line? Then what happens?
Well, first of all, there is a part of me that if somebody had sort of identified the racism in Trading Places and was able to explain the ending, I'd probably split up with them because they're too good for me. But let's just assume, for the purpose of this, that I've got some sort of self-esteem and that I decide to stay with you.
Yeah.
We make love and you put on Thin Red Line. I think I would pretend yet again, like I did that fateful evening in the cinema.
You'd stick with that.
I don't know the idea of watching that again. I don't know, man.
I say to you, as I put it on, I go, I don't know if you've seen this film, but like, you just can't not like it because it really rewards you. This film gives back what you put in, and that's why I love it. And that's how I think relationships should be. But I whack on Thin Red Line.
Oh, God, I don't even know.
And by the way, when we made love, it was fucking great.
Yeah. Yeah, but this is also post-ejaculation, so I've not even got an erection keeping me through this. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like... you're in that sort of blank void post-orgasm. You suddenly sort of don't understand what anything means anymore anyway.
God, I mean, maybe in that context, I'd enjoy the Thin Red Line. I'd really like it. And then I'd say to a friend, do you know what? Do you know I told you about that time I went to watch cinema? Yeah. I sat down and watched it again. And I actually think I like Thin Red Line. And then my mate would go, fucking hell, Brett's really got you where he wants you, doesn't he? Oh my God, it's pathetic.
Do you know his finger. You are whipped.
Do you know how much you've changed since you've been with Brett? You're pathetic, man. Actually, a few of us have been talking about this. Is it true that you showed him Trading Places and you told him that he understood it in a way that none of your friends do? Is that true?
You are dick whipped. You are absolutely dick whipped. It's pathetic. Oh, what? Your review of all films now is, yeah, it's great if you've just come. Pathetic.
Oh, God.
Robes, if you could show a child one film, what would it be?
So I've got a specific film and a specific child for this.
Perfect.
I would like to show my second son the film Coco. Now, let me explain why. So Coco is an amazing film, okay? And agreed. I think that what's great about that film is it teaches you about death and remembering people and what that means. And I think that's such a valuable lesson to children. It was a valuable lesson to anyone, but in particular children. It's part of the reason why they tell you to get a pet, because it's like training for when you die.
Yeah.
For your kids, I mean. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
So,
yeah, it would be Coco, because I think it's an amazing film. That song, Remember Me, Pixar is so good at choosing music that the refrain from which takes you straight back to the film and where you were when you watched that film. It's incredible. Like, Up. Do you know what I mean? Like, the Ratatouille, the piano thing from Ratatouille, whatever the song is from Ratatouille, all of that. Coco, that Remember Me. My wife, Lisa, cannot hear that song without starting to cry. It's like, it's amazing. Anyway, the reason I say a specific child is because when that film came out, we were in LA doing the one series special production of Just Another Immigrant. One series, both because it was a completely finite and complete story, and the other reason is because Showtime didn't want any more. We were going to the cinema quite a bit with the kids, and we wanted to go and watch Coco. And my second son Alex said to me, "I don't want to go to watch Coco. I don't
How
want to go
was
to the
he
cinema."
At the time, may I ask?
So what was that? 4 years ago. So he would have been five, right?
Okay.
So he said, "I don't want to watch Coco," and I said to him, "I'm really sorry, but that is not an option because there's nobody to look after you at home, and you're too young to be left at home on your own. So you are going to have to come and come to the cinema with us." And he said, "Well, I'm not going to watch the film." And I said, "Well, that is your prerogative." Right? I said, "But you are coming to the cinema with us." I'm not kidding you. And this is something he did that I've got so much respect for him for, right? He sat with his back towards the screen for the entirety of the film. I mean, at first, I thought, this is going to last a few minutes. I said to him, "Come on, turn around, stop messing about." He said, "I don't want to watch this film." And in a single child protest, he sat and faced away from the screen for the entire duration. And I've got to tell you, man, he became one of my heroes for that.
Yeah.
Like, to have to have that level of conviction, just amazing. The reason I want him to see that film is he missed a great film. To make a point, he missed an incredible film.
Yeah.
And so I want him to, I'd love to show him that film. So when you say if you could, that suggests a dream scenario. If I could show a child one film. I live with the kid that I'm talking about, and Coco is easily accessible. I mean, we've got Disney Plus, so I don't know why I'm talking to you.
It still sounds like it's going to be a struggle if he remembers. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're going to have to set up two screens, one in front of him and one behind him. Mm. One to the side. You've basically got to have screens. You know, like when you do Ranganation, you've got all those screens. I'd say set them up 360 degrees so that whatever position he takes, he's going to have to fucking see that film. The only way for him to avoid it is to keep his eyes shut for an hour or 40.
Oh, yeah. I think that's what it's going to have to be.
I really respect that.
Okay,
good luck to him. But I get what's annoying about it is you're going to have to get a pet. If he doesn't see Coco, you're going to have to get him a fucking pet to teach him about death.
Well, we are getting a dog, actually.
Right, that's because you haven't seen Coco, I get it. You could save a lot of time.
Have you got a pet?
No, I don't want to learn about death.
No, but I mean, have you got a pet for the other reasons? That's not the only reason, is it? I mean, there's other reasons, like stroking it, and, I don't know, and having something that loves you unconditionally.
Yeah. No, I don't have a pet. Right. I like I like him when I see him, knocking about.
Yeah.
But I've seen Coco, so I get it.
Yeah.
What is the film that made you the most uncomfortable?
Have you seen Knock Knock?
The Keanu Reeves, two women arrive at his door, have sex with him, and then destroy his life.
Yeah.
Eli Roth. Yeah.
Yeah. What did you think of that film?
Do you know what? Truthfully, I haven't seen it. I've seen lots of bits of it, and I thought, this film, I feel like I get it without seeing it. And it's,
You get it as much as I get it. The reason it made me feel uncomfortable is not the threesome. So basically, he takes these women in. Their car's broken down or something, and then they put it on him big time, and then he has sex with them in the shower, I believe.
Yeah.
And Ramesh says, as if he's vague about those details of it. And then they
the shower. I think you see
nipples 17 times in that scene. I couldn't tell you for sure. Then they decide that because he's done that, he is deserving of any punishment that they can meter on him, whatever the word is. And so, and then basically they destroy his life. The reason it made me feel uncomfortable is just because he was such a nice bloke. Mm. You know, he seemed like such a nice family man. And then he made this error, and then he was an arsehole. And I just thought, it's a really thin line between being a good bloke and being a complete and utter fucking prick, isn't it? And I think, listen, I'm not suggesting I'm going to have there's never going to be a threesome on the cards for me. But I now feel like, after I watched that film, for a little while, I sort of thought, I managed to convince myself I'm just waiting for the thing that tips me over into being an arsehole, and then it'll be,
I mean, I guess you won't know until two women in wet T-shirts show up at your door saying their car's broken down and start trying to kiss you. From what I've seen of the scene, that's the bit that I'm sort of like, the women who turn up at his door seem like something's up. Doesn't seem natural, the move from, our car's breaking down, can we have sex? I think even if that happened, I was a single man, two women would show up at my door, say, my car's breaking down, shall we have sex? I think I'd have a few questions before.
Do you know what I genuinely say? If two women turned up and they said, our car's broken down, we need somewhere to stay, I'd say to them, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm a married man, I'm with a woman who's far too good for me, I love my children, I just cannot afford to roll the dice on this situation. So I'm happy to make a phone call from here while you sit in the car.
Yeah.
I'll get you an Uber to wherever you need to go. I'll even pay for the car to be recovered. But I absolutely cannot let you... And in fact, what I would say is, if you stay on the driveway for any longer, I will call the police and tell them you're trespassing.
I'd just be like, listen, you seem very nice. You're both... You know, I understand your car's breaking down. I don't quite understand how the solution is us having sex.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it isn't, but I feel like there's probably a couple of other options before we get to that, and maybe we should explore them first.
He gets so close to not having sex with them,
right?
Like it's all, and then it's right at the last minute. He just sort of does it, and then that's it. It's all over for him. It is all over for him.
Horrible.
Yeah, anyway. That film I felt uncomfortable just because it made me ask some serious questions about sort of breakdown in cicada threesomes and how I'd react to them.
Ramesh Ranganathan, you are an absolute bloody delight. Let's call it what it
so
is. Give the man a BAFTA for this podcast alone. Now, at the end of it, I say this. I've let you live. I've enjoyed this so much, I'm going to let you live. However, you might die any day. That's up to me. I won't tell you when, but it could happen. So just in case, in your will, you can leave one disc, one DVD for your family, whoever. What DVD are you leaving?
I am leaving a little DVD I like to call Kuch Kuch Hota Hai.
100%.
Because it's long, mm-hmm. It's romantic.
So romantic.
It reminds me of the time when I went on an inappropriate date with my mum.
Mm-hmm. Double bill with Jurassic Park.
No, in all seriousness, it'd probably be Planes, Trains, because I really love it. And so yeah. You know, I'd want them to have a laugh.
You could have that. Ramesh, I bloody love you.
I love you too, Brett.
Is there anything you would like to tell people to look for, listen to, watch out for coming up?
No.
Great. My advice, turn on your telly. It'll be there. It'll be there and you won't be mad about it. It's honestly a gift. Ramesh, peace and love.
Love you, Brett.
Love you. Happy birthday.
Love you. Thank you.
So that was episode 155. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 25 minutes of chat with Ramesh, secrets, there's a video, all sorts. Get to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but don't write about the show, write about the film that means the most to you and why. I do read them. I really like it. It helps numbers and Maureen loves you for it. Thank you for listening, everyone. I hope you're all well. Thanks so much to Ramesh for doing the show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lylan for the photography. Come and join me next week for another banger. So that is it for now. I hope you're all well. Have a lovely week. And please, be excellent to each other.
Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations, prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.